This episode of the Signal 51 Chronicles is brought to you by Oscar's Pub, 6323 Kent Bowie Boulevard.
Roxo Media House.
A Signal 51 is police code for an investigation, a law enforcement proceeding that is a systemic and thorough attempt to learn the facts about a possible crime that is complex and whose facts and circumstances are generally hidden, at least initially, behind obstacles that can be coincidental and or man-made. Investigations methods are formal. I'm John Henry, a journalist. My partner is Jake White, a retired Fort Worth police sergeant. And together, we examine the difficult cases of law enforcement, both in Fort Worth and around the region. This is Signal 51. The show is designed specifically for a more mature audience. Some of the content is graphic and is not intended for younger audiences. This week on the Signal 51 Chronicles, boozy ball players and other tales of falling down. In the early morning hours of this past Sunday at 6:10 a.m., according to Dallas police, officers were dispatched to the old East Dallas neighborhood because of what was described as a suspicious person. The man reportedly knocking on doors of a higher-end townhouse complex in the 1600 block of Tribeca Way in the heart of the city that was East Dallas in the late 1800s. This was a call where the unknown was the only certainty in the minds of responding officers. At that time of night, or morning, as it was, it could be anything. An intruder, a victim in distress seeking refuge, or, but unlikely, a Jehovah's Witness coming to preach a non-Trinitarian form of faith. No, it turned out to be none of that, but not atypical either. Dallas police arrived a short time later and discovered the man and determined, Jake, he was intoxicated.
So they say.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
The 25-year-old, wearing blue jeans, a black shirt, black hoodie, was arrested. The fifth person arrested the same day for the same alleged offense. He was taken to a Dallas PD holding facility, charged with public intoxication. Let's jump back several years before police got this call. It was January 30th. A couple began an argument in the man's room over another woman. She said the man quickly became violent and threw her on the bed, grabbed her by her hair, and hit her on the side of the head hard enough to rupture her eardrum. The man allegedly took her down to his car where she pleaded with a valet telling them, quote, please don't let him take me. I'm scared for my life. The courageous valet replied, quote, I don't know what to do. This couple was headed west on the way back to Fort Worth. And during that drive, the man said he would drop her off and take his car and go kill himself. She said later, he told her to shut up and threatened to kill her too. After the two arrived at her Fort Worth apartment, the ex-girlfriend said she feared for her life and grabbed a knife from her kitchen and went after the man, who ran outside. She also went outside and screamed for help. Fort Worth police used a helicopter to search for the man after the girlfriend told officers that she was worried about his welfare, considering he said he would kill himself. No worries, the man was later found safe, though police didn't say where. The preliminary investigation determined that, quote, a possible assault had occurred in the jurisdiction, or multiple jurisdictions, a release says. Quote, the complainant was uncooperative with officers on scene, but expressed concern about the man's well-being. Fort Worth police tried to call him and search for him around the city, including with Air One, the police helicopter. Police made no arrests and didn't find a crime scene within their jurisdiction, but took a report and passed that information to the Dallas Police Department. They, of course, were involved in this as well. The department, quote, will deploy all useful personnel or tools available to fully investigate any call, a spokeswoman said, especially when there is concern for the health or safety of a person. A prominent Fort Worth attorney who often represented police officers and firefighters joked with his well-known wit that the helicopter probably took the man to, of all places, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones's house. The woman at first refused to cooperate with Fort Worth police, who said they would not arrest the boyfriend because there was a lack of evidence. Dallas police also initially dropped their investigation until the woman filed a case with them and police announced they were reopening the case. Chief David Brown said that detectives plan to meet again with the man's girlfriend when she's ready to discuss the domestic violence assault investigation. Quote, "It's not uncommon for victims to either delay or go at a very slow pace in coming forward when it's a domestic violence issue," Chief Brown said. "We will continue to speak with the victim, but at her pace." Eventually, a protective order was discharged to keep these two lovers apart. The man had to stay away from his girlfriend for 2 years and pay the woman's attorney fees of more than $12,000. The man was not arrested or charged, though Dallas PD said at the time that the investigation was still ongoing. Let's fast forward to 2018, the month March. Headline, police in Mansfield are investigating serious allegations of domestic violence. The story goes, a woman who says she has been in a relationship with a man since their high school days in Mesquite said she was at his home in Mansfield on a Tuesday night when they began to argue over something very important, a text message that he wanted to see on her phone. She says she refused to unlock the phone. So she says he goes into a chokehold. "I remember him choking me and I'm trying to calm him down and I just couldn't. And I blacked out. I just couldn't calm him down at all," the woman told reporters. "The pressure was just hard. The pressure got hard to where I just remember just collapsing completely. And I woke up in a puddle of blood on the kitchen floor. My whole right side was full of blood on the kitchen floor." She went on to say the man eventually dragged her to a bathtub, took her clothes off, and tried to clean her up. Hours later, by this time the next day, she said the man drove her to Dallas Regional Medical Center in Mesquite. But when hospital staff separated the couple and began asking them questions independently, she said the man fled the hospital and never returned. The woman suffered a broken jaw on her left and right sides. Then, because she was having difficulty breathing from a swollen and constricted airway, she was airlifted to Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas for further treatment. She was released 3 days later. The woman, again to newspaper reporters, said, "I've never seen that much blood. I thought I was bleeding from somewhere else because it caused so much blood." Now, looking back at these cases, Jake, there seems to be a theme: alcohol and domestic violence.
You are correct in that, but there's also another thing.
Oh yeah, do tell.
So each one of these people that we've described, the suspect, if you will, the way the story's framed, they're all quarterbacks.
Football quarterbacks, North American football quarterbacks.
North American football quarterbacks. Some with NFL experience.
Not good NFL experience, but yes.
Well, experience nonetheless.
Yep.
But all three were notable at the college game.
Certainly were.
So in the first case, we're talking about the arrest of Stetson Bennett IV.
TCU nemesis.
Ironically, Stetson was in town for a training opportunity. Training to become an NFL QB. So they say. I say in town because he was literally in town, in our town of Fort Worth.
Right.
The same town who houses the team he destroyed in the, I had to use it for you.
Yeah, that's my favorite term.
In the quote-unquote natty just a few weeks ago.
Love it.
Yeah.
Don't love it.
So Stetson seemed to be taking advantage of a short break from training somewhere here in Fort Worth. Like so many, he goes to that city to the east of us and just cuts loose. Rules out the window. So why Stetson was roaming around a townhouse complex knocking on doors is not known. But what is known is that can be dangerous.
Certainly can.
just a few short miles away in 2007, we had a notable musician who, under similar circumstances, not identical circumstances, knocking on the door in wee hours of the morning, he was shot and killed. I think he had taken a medication to suppress nicotine, I suppose. Mm. The second case with Fort Worth ties.
He was also drinking too, the Auburn guy, right?
I don't know for sure. I think he had been out that night. I don't know for sure. I know that the medication was the root cause on his.
All right.
But the second case we talked about with the Fort Worth ties, that's old Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel.
He reminds me of Alfred E. Newman on Mad Magazine.
Okay, I've never thought of that comparison, but yeah, I could see that. Johnny Manziel has a dismal agreement with prosecutors that will require the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback to meet conditions for a year before being cleared of a domestic violence charge against him. Dallas County District Attorney's spokeswoman said Manziel, he wasn't present when the agreement was filed. The former Cleveland Browns player will be required to complete an anger management class, attend a domestic violence impact panel, and participate in the NFL's substance abuse program or something similar. Manziel, who was 23, about to turn 24, faced a misdemeanor charge that carried a penalty of up to a year in jail and a $4,000 fine. He was accused of hitting and threatening his former girlfriend during a night out in January. With previous court orders, Manziel will not be allowed to have contact with the victim under the agreement, report said. And finally, the third one we talked about.
Very sad story.
It is a sad story. That's TCU Horned Frogs' very own Trevon Boykin. Former Texas Christian University and Seattle Seahawks quarterback Trevon Boykin pleaded guilty Wednesday to two felony and two misdemeanor charges, Tarrant County prosecutors said in the release several years ago. Boykin, 26, would spend 3 years in prison for aggravated assault and tampering with a witness. He was to also spend 180 days in the Tarrant County Jail for the misdemeanors of theft of service and theft of property. Boykin was arrested in Tarrant County in June of 2019 on one charge of aggravated assault of a family member with a deadly weapon and one charge of tampering with a witness. Those charges stemmed from a March 2018 incident in which Boykin beat his girlfriend so badly that she was hospitalized and her jaw had to be wired shut. Court documents obtained by a local news station showed that Boykin had cleaned up the crime scene and police found evidence of blood in Boykin's Mansfield home. Subsequently, the Seattle Seahawks cut Boykin from their roster. It didn't stop there. In December of 2019, Boykin faced a new criminal charge, or charges, after he failed to pay for a hotel room in Arlington. Boykin had been in the Tarrant County Jail since November 2019, but several new charges had been added to his record recently, including two theft charges this week after he was accused of taking fans' money for TCU merchandise without paying for them, the affidavit said. A third misdemeanor theft charge was added on December 9th of that year by Arlington police in connection with an October incident when he used a fake name to check into a hotel room and then didn't pay for the room. Boykin's trouble with the law started in 2015, 2 days before the 2016 Alamo Bowl between the TCU Horned Frogs and the Oregon Ducks.
Crazy game, too, by the way.
Indeed it was.
That was the one Bram Kohlhauser became the cultural icon by leading him back from 30 down.
Yeah.
All right, anyway.
So, just shortly before that game in San Antonio, Boykin got into a fight at Pat O'Brien's and then assaulted a cop. He was later arrested and charged with assaulting a public servant, including bodily injury. He was suspended from play in the Alamo Bowl. In June 2016, Boykin pleaded no contest to resisting arrest in the Alamo Bowl incident and received 1 year probation, dismissing the police assault charge. He was fined $1,500 and ordered to apologize to the arresting officer. In 2017, Boykin was arrested twice in 11 days. In March 2017, Boykin was arrested for public intoxication and possession of marijuana after the car he was riding in crashed into a bar in uptown Dallas. Then, in April of 2017, Boykin was arrested in San Antonio after turning himself in for a violation of his June 26 probation in the Uptown incident. So I think ultimately there's that theme we discussed and how this goes off the rails so quickly. All three of these guys were notable in the communities where they played, and you know, obviously Manziel and Boykin went on to NFL careers and subsequently tanked those rather quickly.
Yep.
But I think there's got to be,
because of these problems mostly.
Yeah. Is it a coincidence though? I mean, is it the yeah, I think there's this. So crime, just my personal opinion, It can be, I think it's the perfect combination of a genetic predisposition and your environment. You may be genetically disposed to commit crime, but if your environment doesn't permit you to commit crime, you're likely not. Or on the flip side, you could be in an environment where crime is acceptable, but you don't have that genetic disposition, right? Well, these guys, these three stories have all kind of found, to a certain degree, found that fine balance, I guess. Because we never know the backstories. We never know what, like in these cases, what the schools think. These could be one-off incidences.
Yeah.
Or it could be a pattern that's not discussed.
Well, I mean, you know, with Boykin, there was definitely a pattern. He got in trouble several times that you just mentioned.
Do you remember when Josh Hamilton played here for the Rangers?
I do.
And they had the, what'd they call him? Not like a personal coach. A handler, I believe, is what they phrased him as.
Yeah, he had a babysitter, essentially.
Was it
Jerry Nairn's brother?
Brother, yeah.
I think his name was John Nairn.
Yeah.
Essentially babysat him because Josh Hamilton couldn't trust himself and no one could trust him to stay away from or couldn't trust him to not answer to his demons.
Yeah, and maybe he was there was obviously a long, well-documented tale of addiction in his case. So maybe his is slightly different. But you look at like the Stetson Bennett incident, right? He's not exactly a kid.
Right. I was gonna bring that up. He's 25.
Yeah, he's 25.
I mean, it's younger than you and me.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, when I was 25, I probably didn't make, well, I know when I was 25, I didn't make a real good decision, but.
But you also didn't just win the national championship.
True. Well, I don't know what the psychology of these guys are. I think a lot of these football guys are, you know, Marines have a well-documented mentality. A lot of them do.
They're
risk takers. And I think these football guys are kind of the same way in some instances. You know, they play a risky game, and so that mentality goes. And they're highly competitive. And I think that mentality crosses over to other parts of their lives.
I also wonder the behind the scenes courtroom or prosecution perspective. Are these treated differently than your regular run of the mill public intoxication assault? You know, I mean, Boykin's his well both him Manziel and Boykin, those are, you know, I don't want to even say aside from killing someone. Those are very heinous crimes. I think the man to give us the answer to that is none other than Sean Furkey. You know, John, my favorite bar in West Fort Worth, little place called Oscar's Pub.
Never heard of it. Where is it?
6323 Camp Bowie.
Oh, I do know this place.
Yes. I have been told and have experienced they serve the best cocktails in West Fort Worth.
Pretty tasty.
And at a price that can't be beat.
Cannot.
And a staff that could not be more friendly.
Ugh. I'm telling you.
And when you walk in there, they made a show. They made a TV show in the early 80s, mid 80s. Very much a resemblance.
Heard about it. You're talking Cheers.
It's the exact same thing. You walk in.
Where everybody knows your name.
Everybody knows your name.
Telling you what. Also, it is a very friendly place. In fact, there's an order there that says, or directive there that says, be nice or leave. That's how friendly this place is.
They mean it, too.
Oh, yeah, they mean it, too. And I'm telling you what else. Do not sleep on those tacos in that taco truck. It sits right outside. Oh,
no, sir.
I've had tacos and burritos there. I think it's Gordo's taco truck out there, and it is...
they're good.
It is good. They're really good. I mean, even if you don't want to go... Even if you don't want to... Like, tonight, I've got to go back to the office... And I'm gonna swing by there and not drink 1 ounce of liquor. I'm just gonna get a burrito.
Get a burrito.
Get a burrito and say hello to some people.
Get back in front of the keyboard.
Exactly so. So Oscar's Pub, 6323 Camp Bowie Boulevard. Be there or be square.
Hey man.
And on the phone is Sean Furkey. What's going on?
Not much. How are y'all doing?
Okay, so Sean, give us the rundown. We get these high-profile arrests, whether it's an athlete, an entertainer, musician, whatever you want to call it. There's an idea that there should be some neutrality, if you will, in regards to how those cases are handled when they're involved in a crime. And so we're taught, you know, most prosecutors and even most defense attorneys, frankly, haven't had to try a case when it's somebody of notoriety. But what do you think about the idea of there being of neutrality in regards from a prosecution perspective? What's behind the scenes? What's that look like?
I mean, obviously, every case, you know, every individual, anybody arrested or charged with a crime or suspected of a crime, I mean, everyone should obviously be treated fairly regardless of if they're a, you know, wealthy, high profile athlete or actor, or if they're just, you know, an average Joe like us. So having said that, there's as far as the invest, and I actually have some personal experience I can speak of from this. When I was a prosecutor in Austin, Cedric Benson, the you know, UT All-American running back, who had played college football there, would come to Austin, kept a home there, and had a bunch of friends in town. And poor Cedric, every time it seemed like he came to Austin, you know, he'd get arrested for something. And they were all misdemeanors, like DWIs. He actually had a BWI, a boating while intoxicated case at one point, and then an assault case. And those were all misdemeanors. And typically we would not send a misdemeanor case to a grand jury. You know, we just kind of print up the information. That's the charging instrument. But, you know, we were so concerned that, you know, the public, so some of these were bad arrests, like the DWI, the boating while intoxicated, were not very strong cases. And we were so afraid of the appearance of impropriety, or that, you know, that he would be getting preferential treatment because, you know, he's a high profile, you know, football legend, that we actually ended up presenting those cases to a grand jury and let them throw them out. So, you know, also something that's worth mentioning. A lot of times, you know, whether they're famous or not, people with means are able to hire, you know, the best of the best criminal defense attorneys. And it's, you know, like anything in life, you get what you pay for. And, you know, a lot of these defense attorneys are able to negotiate, you know, really great deals for their clients, And, you know, a lot of times it's because that defense lawyer has built up, you know, a lot of clout around the courthouse. They know how good he is. They know that he'll make a good argument and they're concerned about taking it to trial. So, you know, a lot of times these well-to-do individuals charged with crimes get better deals simply because they can afford better lawyers. But I think as far as an investigation goes, you know, I think the police department, their detectives, the investigators, I mean, I think they go about those investigations, you know, fundamentally the same way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think depending on the severity of the crime, if it's a low-level crime, the first time or two are things done a bit differently. Perhaps they are. Like you mentioned, the sending the misdemeanor case to the grand jury and letting them be right. Making the ultimate determination. But I also think there's a flip side to that. When you have that person that's famous, if you will,
sure,
their reputation goes into the it goes south quickly, right? I mean, we've seen
absolutely.
That some of the cases that we've talked about in this story, in fact, when we look at like a Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, or Trevon Boykin. I mean, when he was at TCU, we all thought he could do no wrong. I mean, everybody had the highest, you know, reputation. He had the best reputation. Everybody thought very highly of him. And then, you know, look what transpired in a short time after that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Here's the thing with Stetson Bennett as well. So he gets arrested on the 29th. A negative thing, right? Well, here's a story I'm looking at. The headline says, Stetson Bennett's drunk Good Morning America interview was his greatest achievement. And it says that Georgia quarterback Stetson Bennett became a superstar overnight, talking about the TCU game, of course. The Natty. The tale of a walk-on quarterback turned college football national champion is so captivating that every movie studio is probably trying to option the story as we speak. But winning the Natty, as it says here, and taking home the MVP in the process isn't the most heroic thing Bennett did this week. Instead, it's turning up on Good Morning America with barely any sleep, drunk as hell.
That's not heroic.
Well, you compare, you know, yeah, like he's arrested 2 weeks later, but which was not a heroic moment for him.
I don't know. Dare one say there's an issue? I mean, again, I'm just basing this on the fact that he's not exactly a kid.
Well, hold on. This goes on here.
Oh.
Let's be 100% clear here. And I'm quoting. Let's be 100% clear here. There's nothing wrong with Stetson Bennett here. Dude is 23 years old. He's not 23 years old. He's 25 years old. Oh, I stand corrected. This is from a year ago when they won the national championship.
That's what I was thinking.
There's nothing wrong with Stetson Bennett here. Dude is 23 years old. He must have been 24. Coming off the biggest achievement of his athletic career. So naturally, he's going to still be a little intoxicated. I mean, hell, when I was in college, this is not me speaking. This is a quote. Okay. I want to make sure this is a quote here. Quote, I mean, hell, when I was in college, I'd drink like this if I knew there was a snow day the following morning. Okay, well, that could be me.
Could have been me, like on Monday night.
The thing that's remarkable, this thing goes on, is his fortitude to hold this interview and handle the energy of an amped up Michael Strahan and Robin Roberts. At a time most of us would be looking for a Bloody Mary to put some hair on that dog. Instead, he's being asked about his self-confidence, fortitude, and belief in himself that allowed him to bring Georgia, and again, this is last year, his first national championship in 41 years. So hats off to Stetson Bennett for playing through the pain, doing what had to be done, and escaping his interview unscathed. It's the kind of leadership and toughness all quarterbacks should aspire to. Then a year later, he's being interviewed by the police.
Yeah, what's that holding? It's the word Dallas PD. It's just like it's really just a drunk tank is all. I don't think it's at Lou Sterrett. It's
just, at a holding facility site.
Yeah, it's not. It's just a rather nondescript spot. But I think.
Not where they were holding Lee Harvey Oswald.
Or was it?
It could have been.
I don't know.
These days.
I've never been there.
I don't think that's jail anymore. I don't know.
I don't know. With him though, with the Bennett thing, to me there just seems like a whole lot on the line, right? Like personally, I think the school, it's kind of risky.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if there's, you know, and it's hard to differentiate. I mean, again, I can't remember the story. He's graduated or
graduated. He had to have graduated, I'm sure. Working on a quote unquote graduate degree.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm guessing. But he's no longer affiliated with them.
No, he's not. But I mean, it's, you know, I mean, he obviously.
Well, you're always going to kind of be affiliated with him.
He's always going to be affiliated with him.
Yeah.
But let's hope there's not a deeper issue. I'm not suggesting that there is. I'm just saying that, you know, let's make some better decisions.
He definitely likes to let his hair down.
And that's apparently. Cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's cool. But not cool when you're banging on doors at 6 o'clock in the morning.
No, not at all.
I mean, you can obviously, you know, we've already had a tragic tale of that here and many others.
Mm-hmm.
Dangerous, risky.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, hopefully.
So, and he wasn't different from Johnny Manziel and our boy, our man Boykin. He wasn't beating anybody up.
No, yeah, and that's let's be abundantly clear.
Yeah,
there's a
beating up girlfriends.
Yeah, there's a very, very distinct difference in what he was alleged to have done versus what Manziel and Boykin had been charged with. Not even in the same arena, ballpark, nothing.
And convicted of.
So not make the only comparison is the fact that they were notable quarterbacks in college. That's the only comparison. I don't. It's got to freak out NFL teams. Just that one PI arrest has got to. I mean, it's got to call his decision making into question.
Yeah, what's his priorities?
Right.
Oh yeah. Well, he was already. You know, he lacks all the measurables, right, for the NFL. He's not big. Doesn't have the great arm. Before the season started, he was looked at as undrafted.
Yeah,
he'd be a free agent. You know, somebody will pick him up and give him a chance.
Hey, he could be the next Mr. Irrelevant, though.
Exactly. No one that guy Brock Purdy didn't have all the measurables either.
I don't know. I mean, to me, like I said, I would just think, you know, I'm all about having fun. Don't get me wrong, but man, that's a lot on the line to gamble.
Yeah, like, go out and let your hair down.
Yeah, where was his buddies?
I don't know.
Like, I will say this. If you were going on to, if you had just won the national championship and you were the quarterback and you were trying out or preparing, I suppose, for training for an NFL career, if you get completely ripped, I don't think I'm going to just let you, oh, John Henry, just roam the streets. You got this, buddy. I think we're going to take some more drastic measures to make sure that you're all right. So where were his friends?
Well, a lot of these guys are kind of like groupies, right? So like they stand to gain from him making it, if they're real buddies and if he actually had buddies around.
I get, yeah.
You know, his hangers on, you know, who you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can see that.
At the very least, they go out, he pays for it, right? You know, when he makes it.
Hey, that's kind of weird. That's kind of lonely. If you're top dog on campus. If you're in his shoes, you come, 700-800 miles away and you've got no, like, I don't know. It's kind of a.
Maybe he wasn't home. Maybe he left or maybe not home, you know, wherever he was staying. And maybe he walked out and has no idea.
I will say the tale of public intoxication arrests. They are.
You have your experiences with these as a police officer.
Yeah. It's all the same tale, though. They have the same, the top two consistencies is number one. Now, keep in mind, you're dealing with this from a sober perspective. You know, and we've all had a few brews. Certain things are probably more funny than what they really are. But when you're stone cold sober, 2 o'clock in the morning, and all you want to do is go home and go to bed.
Yes.
The drunk guy humor is not exactly that funny. In most cases, sometimes it's hilarious, but many times it's kind of annoying. So you have that. The second,
it's generally only funny if you're drunk too.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. The second consistency. I don't know if a lot of people know this. Most cops don't want to deal with that.
No way.
Right? So they're going to be, they're doing everything they can to find that person, hopefully, right? I mean, police have this really cool tool, if you will, called discretion, meaning there's very few things that they absolutely have to arrest someone for. So discretion is commonly used, in, at least in Texas, in public intoxication arrests. And it's, hey, we need to find you a ride. We can, the police can release somebody to a sober, responsible adult. And in Texas, you got to be in a public place. You've got to be intoxicated and you got to be a danger to yourself and or others.
Those are three criteria.
That's the criteria
of public intoxication arrests. All right.
The remedy. Jail.
Yeah.
Class C misdemeanor, like getting a ticket. No big deal.
Right.
But the point of taking them to jail is that they're no longer a danger to themselves or others, mm-hmm. or you can release them to a responsible adult. Mm-hmm. So here's the second thing that so many drunk people have in common. They've either just been blowing their phone up for hours on end or forgot to charge it. But whenever you go, like, hey, is there someone we can call to pick you up?
A responsible adult to come pick you up.
Can we call a responsible adult to come pick you up, please? A
sober, responsible adult, yes.
And it's the fumble in the pocket, and it's pulling out the iPhone, and they hand it to you. And like 9 times out of 10, that sucker's on like 1% or dead. And then like anyone.
Been telling all their buddies to come up to the club.
Maybe that's it. And hey, I mean, look, I don't even know anyone's phone number anymore. Sober.
I don't. Yeah, I don't either.
So that's where the frustration comes in. You're like, man, I just wanted to call you a ride, have somebody come pick
you up. Get you out of my hair.
I just want to be done with it. It's not that big of a deal.
Make sure you're safe.
Go home, sleep it off, have a Bloody Mary in the morning, and whatever. But yeah, those are definitely the two, I don't want to say most common, but very common events. And it all depends on where it's at. You know, I mean, like the Stetson Bennett one, I remember, I mean, this is 20 plus years ago, but it was a 911 call. A guy calls frantically saying somebody had broken into his house and he was in his bed.
You got this, right?
Yeah.
You got this call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was with we called them crusty officers. So we show up, we go inside, and the dude that called 911, he's a little bit frantic.
I would be too.
Understandably so. Yeah. And we go inside and there's a naked dude just laying in his bed under the covers, getting his snooze on, man.
This sounds like, do you remember the guy, what was his name? The actor who, he was in Back to School. Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very, yeah.
He did something like that once.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always those, you know, some of those Hollywood guys, they always have those crazy tales like that. But like I said, I mean, again, we are in Texas. Mm-hmm. There's a high probability if you're a drunk guy banging on a door or stumbling into somebody's back door, it's not going to turn out well.
No, you're like, you could get shot.
Yeah, if it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I mean, let's face it, 6 o'clock, not too many people are knocking on doors at 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-mm. A little bit weird. Mm-hmm. I think it's unfortunate. Like I said, I mean, the thing that I find more troubling is the fact that he had no, it's Stetson freaking Bennett IV. He had no one with him. That's what kind of, that part blows my mind a little bit.
Yeah, I like that. We're missing details on this.
We've got to be missing details because, you know, and I'm sure we'll never find out. Whatever.
Probably not. Unless we talk to Stetson, unless we get Stetson Bennett on our show one day to explain himself.
I don't know if Stetson Bennett's coming on Signal 51, the Chronicles, Fort's only true crime podcast. That's correct. I don't think that's happening.
Sponsored by Oscar.
Sponsored by us. Then we move on to Manziel. We see his, you know, out. I don't, was his a surprise? I don't remember that much. His NFL, his failing NFL career, was that a surprise?
Not really. I mean, from the standpoint that he was a first-round draft pick, late first round, Jerry wanted to take him, the Cowboys. Supposedly, Steven had to tackle Jerry from turning in a card that said Johnny Manziel. That was the draft they took Zach Martin at, I don't know, 10 or
Oh, they made a bad decision there, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Barely, yeah, real bad decision. But it was always questionable about whether he had the measurables to play in the league because he wasn't a big guy either.
Did he get in trouble in college?
No, I don't think he got any legal trouble, but he was always a real hothead and did a lot of stupid things. I don't remember him getting in trouble. Now Boykin, of course, didn't get any trouble at all at TCU. Well, other than
that we well yeah
and other, and I, other than the Alamo Bowl thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hey, at least he had to apologize to the cop that he got into a fight with.
Yeah, it's the least he could have done, I guess.
Isn't that kind of a crazy?
Now, word on the street all those years ago while he was playing here, kind of around that time, that it was definitely that season, an old tavern here in town used to have something called turtle races.
No, I've heard this story from, yes, do tell.
And our man, Mr. Boykin, was said to have thrown one of the turtles in some sort of fit of rage or something. I don't know if his turtle didn't win I don't know what the context was. But
dude, I'm not trying to make a joke out of throwing a turtle, but I guarantee you that dude could let it rip, man. Like, seriously.
There's no doubt.
Like, was it one of the little tiny turtles or one of like the mid-sized?
Yeah, mid-sized turtle.
What the red stripes down the side of their face? One, I can't remember what those are called.
I don't know.
Dude, that would be like him throwing like a little mini football, man.
Yeah. I'm assuming he threw it like a frisbee, but I don't know. I have no idea. If he indeed threw it.
If he did, I mean, he could have dropped back a couple steps to the bar and just.
I don't know. Let it rip, I don't know dude. Why anybody would make that up, but that was the word on the street there for a while. You had another story. You had another good story. Were you down on 7th Street when you were patrolling down on 7th Street?
Yeah. The drunk guy who wanted to box us.
Yeah.
And all we wanted to do was call his mom.
Right. And he was right.
Yeah. We were myself and another guy. I send him this video about, probably once a year. We were walking down, it was closing time what do we call it? The new Hell's Half Acres. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even back then, problems. And we were walking and we see a little skirmish outside of a recently closed down tavern that was oh so popular.
Little drunken brawl.
A little drunken brawl, which were a dime a dozen. Well, now they resort to gunfire down there. Yeah, that's true. It has kind of changed.
Maybe we should bring the brawls back.
Yeah, exactly.
We encourage to settle your problems with fists,
not firearms. Like, fairly often. It's kind of weird.
So that's the official position of Signal 51 Chronicles.
we'll go on record with that. So it's a skirmish. Three gentlemen walk away. And there's one guy bleeding from his head, and he's doing that drunk guy stagger down the sidewalk. And the three guys who walk by were African-American males in their mid-20s, probably, if I was gambling on an age. And they saw us, and we saw them, and they said, "He, you know what he just called us." And I was like, you know what, guys, just keep on going. That's good. And here comes drunk, stumbling guy, bleeding from the head. He doesn't want any kind of medical attention.
And you offered him that.
Oh, yeah. Course, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's fully coherent. Just hammered. So we give him the option. Do you want to go to jail or do you want us to call you a ride? And he has no one to call. And I go, well, what about your parents? He's like, I'm 23, man. And I'm like, okay, so do you want to go to jail or call your parents? he protests a little bit.
Because, okay, first of all, he's clearly drunk.
Oh, yeah.
He's clearly possibly could harm himself.
Oh, he was more.
Already has harmed himself.
Yeah, he was definitely a danger to himself.
Danger to himself, yes.
Yes.
So now we're looking for that third pillar. Do we have a sober
adult?
Responsible adult.
And I get a hold of his mother on the phone. He actually had a phone that was relatively charged up. And I call mom and I said, hey, you're going to need to come down and get this guy. He's pretty hammered. Jeez.
Like, time of night was it? 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock?
That was a little, yeah, 2:15, 2:30.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay. So, but she's coming from like North Richland Hills. So we're looking at a 25 minute car ride. That is one other annoying part. Waiting. If they're passed out, like they're not having some kind of medical problem, but they're just sleeping it off, not that big of a deal because they're not really talking or anything like that.
But in this case.
But in this case. I don't know what it was. The cop that I was with, this drunk dude hated him. And he looked at me and he's like, I want to box that MF-er right now. And the cop, my buddy of mine, was like, what? I don't know. I just want to go home, man. Like, I'm not trying to do this. And he's got a pretty good sense of humor, too. So we just let it go, man. I mean, for a solid 15 minutes, this guy is challenging all both of us to a boxing match. How he's going to, you know, whip our ass is what he said.
Just like he just had done with the other guys.
Exactly.
He had a success.
Yeah, he was so successful round one.
Looked like
one.
Jerry Cooney against Larry Holmes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Or anyone against Mike Tyson. Yeah.
Or anyone against Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Was it Buster Douglas who beat him?
Yeah, Buster
Douglas. Except for Buster
Douglas.
Yeah. So anyways, mom shows up, drunk guy, and he's humiliated. I mean, his mom showed up. But at least he had somebody to come pick him up, I suppose. But,
you know. Could have been a lot worse.
Could have been a lot worse, but that's the, you know, the alcohol, you know. I mean, it's been that way. I mean, hell, we covered the professional pedestrian.
Right, right. Fred Miller.
Fred Miller.
From 1897.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously been a thing for, well, however long they've been consuming alcoholic beverages.
I think the answer is forever.
Forever.
Somebody's been getting intoxicated on something.
Yeah.
Whether it be berries or smoking grass or whatever they were smoking in Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
6,000 years ago.
That is, I got to admit, that is always the interesting argument people make for the legalization.
Uh-huh.
I will say, you don't ever, like, the dude that's just smoked a big, just got high.
Yeah.
I mean, they're usually pretty chill.
Oh, yeah.
It is hard to make the, like, which is more, I'm not condoning the, you know, whatever. I could care less, to be honest with you. But it is hard to argue to the contrary.
There's very few people stoned on marijuana, grass or whatever, who are challenging officers to a fight or a boxing match or whatever.
There was a guy just, we could see the street from where we're sitting right now. Again, like all my stories, my heyday was like 20 years ago, I guess. Pull this guy over. That's when blunts real big, man. Maybe they still are.
I have no idea.
Out in the scene anymore, if you will. And I knew the guy. He knew me. I mean, we dealt with the same
people all the time.
Yeah, same guys all the time. And you got to know them by name. And if everything was cool, then it was like you're talking to a buddy. If they were dirty, they were doing something they shouldn't be, they just take off running. I pull the guy over and walk up to his car. I won't say his name, but behind his ear, he's got a big blunt, and he doesn't know that he has this big blunt behind his ear. And I kind of laugh because it's not really that big of a deal. So I don't really say anything about it. I don't want to see how many, you know, does he have any crazy warrants or anything like that. So I go back to my car, and I walk back up, and I was like, hey, what's up, man? And he won't look at me, but he's chewing. And I look, and that blunt's gone. And I was like, hey, did you just eat that blunt that was behind your ear, dude? And he looks at me like a, you know, like when a little 3 or 4 year old kid does something wrong, he looks at me like that, and he's just chewing. And I'm like, dude, like, you're going to throw up if you swallow. Just spit it out. It's not that big of a, I'm not going to jam you up for it. Just spit it out. And he opens the door, dude, and he, it was the most, globs of weed coming out of his mouth. I was like, here's, do you need a bottle of water now, too, to wash that out? And I don't know. I mean, we got way off topic with that, but this whole college sports thing, I mean, we had the, not too far to the south of us, that other school.
Yeah, that Baylor thing, And that revolved around alcohol too, of course.
I don't know. I don't remember the facts of that much. I don't know.
I know that a lot of the victims have been out drinking with select football players, and they were assaulted after they passed out, or they didn't know they were out of their minds and didn't know what they were doing, that type of thing. They were being taken advantage of.
Now, you know how I'm a Coach Prime fanatic now, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna get rich off you this year.
I'll state it. I predict that.
Yeah.
With no facts to back this up, they're winning at least nine games.
Obviously.
It's just a gut feeling that I have that
right?
The Buffaloes are going to win nine games.
I use my gut all the time, too.
But there was an interview with Michael Irvin, and he was talking, you know,
the playmaker.
Oh, I guess he was making some plays somewhere in a hotel room in Dallas or whatever, you know. I mean, he's got a storied past when it comes to that stuff when he was a young man, but he was talking about how one day Deion Sanders like catches him in this hotel room and goes up banging on the door, and Prime is what Stetson Bennett needed. The guy that was like, you're coming with me. Like, you're getting the hell out of this environment.
Right.
You're coming with me. I don't know. Again, I'm kind of just taken back by that whole thing.
Well, hopefully we urge high-profile quarterbacks to use good judgment when they decide they want to let their hair down.
Find a support system.
And if,
like, some dude you can trust.
Right. And if alcohol makes you violent, which it does for some people,
yeah,
we urge you to quit.
Probably a good idea. Well, I guess next week we'll be back on to the normal tale of Signal 51 Chronicles. We've got a couple stories.
Wallowing in the filth of society.
Unfortunately. We've got a few more lined up, ready to go. We're always down for some. We do have some suggestions, one of which was a couple months ago that we're trying to put together, but we're always down for some suggestions.
Yeah.
If you got a story that you want to hear.
That you might even be involved with. You might have been involved with.
That you're involved with. Maybe you know the facts. We're all ears.
Yeah. We want to inform and tell good stories. Tell us again where, tell our fine listeners where they can find us again.
YouTube. Signal 51 Chronicles.
YouTube.
Subscribe.
It's a very popular platform.
It is a popular platform.
Been around for years now.
Yeah. Any Spotify, Amazon, Apple, any of your preferred podcast platforms, we're on it. Signal 51 Chronicles. Mm-hmm. Got a whatever your preferred method of delivery is.
Yeah.
We're there. Definitely.
You can catch us on Facebook.
We're on Facebook from time to, yeah. You can catch some of our clips on Facebook. So.
Are we not on the Elon Musk channel, Twitter?
I should know this.
I think we are.
Are we on the Twitter?
I believe so. We're not on Instagram, I don't believe. Or are we on Instagram?
No, we are on Instagram.
Oh, we are on Instagram.
I don't think we're on the Twitter.
Pretty sure we are.
Oh. We'll have to look into that. And if we're not, we're going to have to get started up with that.
No, what we're not on, I know, is TikTok.
I don't think I can.
No, I'm anti-TikTok.
Until we get you up at Oscar's Pub one night, a couple of those preferred beverages, you doing your little...
My little comedic routine?
No. I'm gonna by the end of the night, maybe you doing like some little 20-second TikTok dances or something. It'd be awesome, man. Yeah, I mean, and hey, we gotta, you gotta.
Our you know, our we have a mutual friend who has a video of me dancing in Key West.
I want to ask him to see that video, but I'm not. I really don't. And I won't.
I just told some jokes and I was, you know, very, very, very pleased with how they were delivered and the punchlines and stuff like that. So
also can't forget to promote this. Mm-mm. And I'm going on record with it right now.
No.
That you and the legendary Johnny D, John Davis. From the world's most famous, America's favorite cover band, Pooh Live Crew.
Correct.
We'll be in a little
big doing, show this Saturday, too.
They do have a huge show this Saturday at Ridgely Theater. Don't want to miss that. You guys will be doing a little two-man joke-telling musical event.
There's a vicious rumor out there that that might be happening, but the contract has not been signed yet.
It's been prepared.
No I's, no dotted I's, no cross T's.
We're almost there. All right. We got to get.
All right. See ya.
Later.
Roxo Media House.